At this point in time, brothers and sisters, we are going to attempt to re-record the portion of our class that was lost on the tape. We're doing this in a different environment and atmosphere. The recording equipment is not as loud. You will have to turn up the volume maybe a little bit more on your stereo equipment. But we're going to do our best to fill in the blanks at this point in time. Where we left off in our discussions when the malfunction in the recording equipment happened is we had just been discussing the fourth beast and all its several manifestations as it appears in the apocalypse. And indeed, those were very important points that we had discussed. We need to see that once again, Daniel and John stand together, as it were, upon the same sand of the seashore, watching the same events from different perspectives in time. In Daniel 7, in verse 7 there, where we left off, and we will try to discuss Daniel 7, 7 and 8 to pick up our missed material, we read, "After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly. And it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were 3 of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were the eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things." Once again, when we examine what John saw in the 13th chapter of the Apocalypse, we realize why Daniel does not name specifically the beast that is before us. It is an unnamed beast. The first was a lion, the second a bear, the third a leopard. Beast seen in nature. But now, at this point in time, he describes a beast simply as a fourth beast, and he describes its details. John shows us that what Daniel saw was a beast that was but a compilation of all the previous beasts that had come before it. In the second verse of Revelation chapter 13, we read, "And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and his great authority." Here we clearly see that John is envisioning the same events that Daniel saw from a different perspective. Can any Bible student deny the connection that then exists between Revelation 13 and Daniel 7? Without question, the beast is the same. The details are different because John sees these events from a different period in time. We want you to note that in verse 2, that it was the dragon that gave him his power and his seat and great authority. We'll speak about that a little bit more in a few moments as we see John's descriptions of the fourth beast. Let us turn back then to chapter 7, in verse 7 of the Apocalypse. Chapter 7 and verse 7 of Daniel. Daniel saw a fourth beast. In the 23rd verse of Daniel chapter 7, we are given a very clear indication that what Daniel saw, he was supposed to relate to the image that he had interpreted for Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2 as well. For verse 23 tells us, "Thus he said," speaking of the angel who is giving Daniel the exact knowledge of the vision that he required and desired, "Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon earth." The fourth kingdom upon earth, brothers and sisters. That clearly tells us that there is a connection then between these four beasts and the image which was seen by Nebuchadnezzar. That was interpreted by Daniel. Daniel told Nebuchadnezzar that that head of gold represented his Babylonian empire. We know then that the succession of world empires is being described again here in chapter 7. We saw clearly that when we saw the first beast of the lion come forth, we know without question that Jeremiah tells us that the lions are the Assyrian and Babylonian powers who had devoured the nation. We see clearly then the progress of world empires once again before us in Daniel chapter 7. And just as Daniel chapter 2 truly in its final manifestation represents a one world dominion, so Daniel is given that same information when he sees this fourth beast, which is a compilation of all that came before it. And he is told that it is the fourth kingdom upon earth. The fourth kingdom and last of the kingdoms upon earth, we should note. And that is very important for us to get into our minds. He then was told and saw, we should say, that this beast was dreadful. Now, dreadful is the Chaldee word dekal, which of course is the same as in the Hebrew. They were sister languages, so we are not going to as much differentiate between Chaldee and Hebrew in some of our remarks. We may just say Hebrew by mistake in a couple of these places, but we do not necessarily consider that a mistake, as they are very much sister languages. When the Hebrew language came back once upon the scene, of course, we know that many Arabic words were used to help fill in for modern-day words that never existed in biblical Hebrew because they are such sister languages. Once again, the word is dekal, D-E-C-H-A-L, for dreadful. It literally means to slink, to crawl, to cause to fear, and it is suggestive of the crocodile. Thus, remember that John said it was the dragon that gave the beast of the sea its power. So we see a connection once again that this beast was dreadful like a crocodile to the beast of the apocalypse, which is described in Revelation 12:9 as the dragon, and once again in verses 11 of chapter 13. Let's look back at the prophet Isaiah as well on this particular point in Isaiah chapter 27, and we're going to read the first verse. Isaiah writes, In that day, Yahweh with his sore and great and strong sword shall punish Leviathan, the piercing serpent, even Leviathan, that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea. Brothers and sisters, Isaiah was blessed and privileged to see exactly what Daniel and John saw as well, with different details and from a different perspective. The beast in the sea, the dragon, that old serpent, the same which gives the beast of the sea its power and its description of being dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly. We also want to make note that in Daniel chapter 2, in the 31st verse, we have similar terminology used there that we want to make note of. Daniel chapter 2, verse 31. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. Interestingly, Daniel describes the entire image as terrible. The word used is dekal, the same word used to describe the fourth beast in Daniel chapter 7. The coincidence is intentional, therefore not being a coincidence, we might say. the comparison between the two is intentional. The deity is giving us the ability to see the connection between the two dreams, the dream and the vision. We're next told in Daniel chapter 7 that this beast had great iron teeth. It had great iron teeth, leaving us again with little doubt the connection between Nebuchadnezzar's image and the fourth beast. The fourth kingdom, which Daniel has already been told in verse 23, that the fourth beast is the same as, was of iron. And now we see that this fourth beast had iron teeth. Interestingly, we must make the connection in our own minds that John saw that this beast had a lion mouth. We therefore then see in this fourth beast a lion mouth with iron teeth. It helps us to understand that concept of the one world image, the one world dominion that will exist in the last day. For the mouth will be both Babylonian in nature and Roman in nature. It will be both lion and iron together. Additionally, Daniel was told in the 19th verse, when once again the teeth of iron are described to us, that the nails of this creature were brass. The idea of iron and brass being joined together here purposefully reminds us of what we saw in Daniel chapter 4 in the 17th verse, when we saw the great tree that represented the Babylonian kingdom cut down and banded about with a band of iron and a band of brass. The Greek and iron elements in the latter days were to play a pivotal role in this fourth beast system, this beast of the last days. The last item described for us in verse 7 of Daniel chapter 7 is that this beast had 10 horns. Verse 24 gives us the very detailed and specific information again that the 10 horns out of this kingdom, out of this fourth iron kingdom, are 10 kings that shall arise. Therefore, we know of a surety, brothers and sisters, that the horns and the toes of Nebuchadnezzar's image represent the same. The fourth beast is the fourth kingdom, verse 23 says. The 10 horns are 10 kings that shall arise out of this dominion. Now, we'll make a comment at this point in time about the 10. We remember that in Revelation chapter 12 in verse 3, that the dragon there is seen with 10 horns. We remember in chapter 13 in verse 1 of the Apocalypse that the beast of the sea had 10 horns. And in chapter 17 and verse 12 of the Apocalypse, once again, importantly, the scarlet-colored beast is described with 10 horns. We are clearly supposed to see the connection. And we are reminded that even John was told specifically that the 10 horns he saw upon the scarlet-colored beast are 10 kings. The 10 is very important, for we know that this fourth kingdom, the Iron Kingdom, did become subject to a division of its empire into 10 barbaric nations. If we want to be very detailed about the subject, we would say it was 11 barbarian nations that came down. 10 for the individual barbarian nations, and another to act as the seventh Gothic head that stood upon that beast of the sea that John saw. It has to have a head as well, and of course the Goths, as that head, ruled in Rome for a specific period of time. Now concerning the number 10, we want to read a comment from Eureka, Volume 4, page 194. Brother Thomas wrote this, and we do feel it is an important point. The prophecy does not require that the number of the kingdoms should be invariable. And we'll pause for a moment from Brother Thomas's words. Indeed, the number has not been invariable through history. It has risen, it has declined. But what is important, that it was 10 when Daniel saw his vision. We'll continue with the quote. They were 10 in the period of their foundation, and from this fact have acquired the symbolic designation of 10 horns, so that though their number might be reduced one half, the power that might be established over the territory they originally occupied would, to that extent, be represented as the 10 horns. Once again, that's Eureka, Volume 4, page 194. We feel that's an important point. It is how those beasts originally existed that is important to us when we see these symbols. We saw the lion come up with eagle's wings plucked off, the bear with three ribs upon its mouth. Certainly, throughout the careers of those empires, when we study their histories, we know that there was variations in events that took place, but it is the initial descriptions that become very important about them, and therefore, just in this fourth beast system, it's important to note that it was ten-horned. It was ten-horned when John saw them as well, when he stood upon the sand of the seashore in verse 13. Now, having read Brother Thomas's remark, we will also put forth that we ourselves would not dispute anyone who felt that at the time the scarlet-colored beast stands up against the Christ, that though the number of Europe is now more than 10, that at that particular point in time it may end up being 10 kingdoms as well, just as John describes in chapter 17 in the scarlet-colored beast. Verse 8 then takes us to a very critical historical time period. And it is a very notable point of the prophecy. Daniel will spend a great deal of effort understanding what he now sees, and the angel will give detailed words of what he now sees. And the time period that we will discuss in the next class, in verse 26, the time, times and a half, is directly related to this notable event. Verse 8 tells us that another little horn rose up, and before this little horn, three horns were plucked up by the roots, and that this horn had the eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things, great blasphemous words. Historically, this is put forth for us when Pepin, the father of Charlemagne, invaded into Italy and conquered what then became known as the Papal States for the Bishop of Rome. Pepin obtained the Exarchate of Ravenna, the Lombard Kingdom, and what was then to be called the State of Rome for the Pope. And from that point in time onward, the Pope began to wear a tripart crown, showing his rule over these three papal states. These three papal states have been elsewhere described as the Huns, the Lombards, and the... Now, Langer, in his Encyclopedia of World History, dates this important event as 756 A.D. Gibbon writes it as beginning in 758 A.D. And they are very close in their time periods, and so that speaks to a very important historical event for us. So then we would say that the little horn with the eyes of a man rose up through the help of Pepin, and three horns were plucked up in the air between 756 and 758 A.D. Now, the little horn is also described as having the eyes as the eyes of a man. And this is certainly very appropriate. And it is no coincidence that the Pope is often described as the Holy See. The word for man in the text before us is Enosh, which denotes man in his sick, weakly, mortal state. It is the word that is used for man to denote his sinful condition. And certainly that relates to this great little horn. For the papacy has had the eyes like the eyes of a sickly man. Its thoughts have been fleshly. Its motives have been wicked, and to promote the thoughts and the desires of the flesh, and not those of the deity. eyes, as the eyes of the man, are important as well. For as the Lord says in Matthew 6, in verses 22 and 23, it is by the eye that we know what the person's character is, where he discusses that if thy whole body be evil, then thy eye will be evil. If thy body is full of light, then the eye is full of light. And it is a very descriptive portion of the body. When one is angry or happy or sad, those emotions are shown forth within the eye. And what is shown forth then in the eye of this little horn is that it is the eye of man, not of God. Also given to this little horn is a mouth speaking great things. It is very important that we look once again to what John saw in the 13th chapter of the Apocalypse and see how his discussion of these great words continues. We'll look over at Revelation chapter 13, verses 5 through 8, where he writes, "And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. It's a very important comment. As John then starts to see this little horn here, as he starts to see it from his point of view, and its great blasphemies, he sees it continuing for 42 months. We'll have more on that later. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of the life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world." This is a mouth that speaks great blasphemies. It is a mouth that Paul writes of in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 4 that sits, noting that it is as God sitting in the place of God. And it is very important that we note that Justinian called him the God of the earth. At this point in time, we'll end our recording. We think that we have sufficiently covered the material that was accidentally lost. We know that we stumbled over our words a little bit, but we did not want to seek for perfection. Hopefully this will fill in the missing material.